we go. Okay. And it is starting right now. Okay, here we go. So first of all, I do want to thank everybody for not watching the Bulls or the Blackhawks or anything like that. That does work out a lot better. Here we go. There's a pasuk in the beginning of Acharemos. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Acharei Mos Shnei Bnei Aaron Bekovar Zomav Bnei Hashem Vayamusu. After the death of the two sons of Aaron, they came close to HaKadosh Baruch when they died. So Rav Shor asked the kasha, but it's taken out by three different Hasidic rabbis. Rav Shor, Rav Shor. Here we go. Here it is. This bit. It says two times the word Misa by Nadav and Aviyu. Two times. What are the two times? Akre Mos Shnei Ben Aaron. And at the end of the pasuk says the word Bayamusu. It says the word Misa twice. So what are we getting out of that word Bayamusu, the death twice? So here is the Nesivah Shalom. Steve Shalvin comes to play and he says the following. I heard this from Rabbi Schechter a couple weeks ago, but you got to take it a little bit further. The idea is, every mitzvah that a person does is like playing with fire. If you do a mitzvah, you're literally playing with fire. Because Hashem says that everything that I do, everything that I have, is fire. They're so potent, mitzvahs are, they can destroy you, they can burn you to pieces. They can throw you down and completely, if you do them improperly, everything is destroyed and you've knocked yourself down. The mysterious nefesh that a person has to have in every mitzvah is the willingness to die every time you put on tefillin. You know what should happen? You should get up in the morning. You should go wash your hands in Negovasser. You should just implode. You should implode. You should completely explode. You should just fall into pieces. You should go and put on tefillin in the morning. You should go wrap tefillin in the morning and immediately explode again. There should be a huge fire that comes from you. The mysterious nefesh that happens. You put on tzitzis in the morning. Every time you put on tzitzis, you put on a talus. You just boom. That's what should happen. Because what should happen, what should be, is that every mitzvah you do should kill you. But Kadosh Baruch Hu commanded every mitzvah. If a Kadosh Baruch Hu commanded you to have this mitzvah, there's no way that he could kill you after he told you to do it. He told you, do this, and then he's going to kill you? That makes no sense. So there's no way that that's how it could work. It can't work that way. That doesn't have view. If they would have been commanded, it would have been a mitzvah that didn't destroy them. But it became a mitzvah that they weren't commanded in. Asher lo tzivu. They weren't commanded to do it. They weren't told to go into the Mishkan. What happens when you do a mitzvah with Mesiras Nefesh and you weren't commanded to do it? You explode. So what happened to another view is they automatically died. They automatically died. They couldn't take it. There was no way for them to live in this world after having done such a mitzvah. I said something similar three weeks ago. I said something very similar. But they simply died from such holiness. You've already lost your business, by the way. I just wanted to throw that out. Okay, regardless. Rav Shor says that was from the Nesivah Shalom. Rav Shor says something a little bit similar, but just enough different that it's there. When you do a mitzvah, you have to use all your chiyus, all your life, everything you have in it. You have to sit there and just use everything. You should be sweating. And I said this to guys when I was in yeshiva this week. I told them, there is no reason why you're not sweating when you're learning. I know it's cold, and I know there's a wind and everything like that. You should be sweating. You should be sitting there, and there should be sweat pouring down your face while you're learning. If you're reading, and if you're getting into it, you should be sweating. You should use everything you have. Put everything into it. Be willing to die for every mitzvah that you do. How have I? We could be there, but it should die. To say to yourself, you know what, I'll miss this Blackhawks playoff game. I'll miss this Bulls game. Sorry? I hope so. The worse it smells, exactly. That's exactly what ends up happening. Because the pasuk says, V'chai bohem. The pasuk says, however, I should say, the pasuk says, V'chai bohem. You should live in them and not die with them. You have to hold yourself back a little bit. Hold yourself back and want to die and not die. Don't lose yourself. Don't go too far. The Ben Ish Chai used to speak in the main shul in Baghdad. This shul was able to hold 1,000 men. Aside from the woman in the Ezra's Nafshanim, aside from the rooftops, the women used to carry their kids to the rooftop to listen into the Ben Ish Chai shir. His mouth was powerful. His voice was powerful. He used to speak so loudly to everybody there. Sometimes the Ben Ish Chai would get extremely into his shirim. One time he got so into it, he said, they say that his face became a flame. It became like a fire. And everybody in the front rows had to turn their face back. They couldn't look at the Ben Ish Chai. It was such a fire, they couldn't do it. and they felt that the Ben Yishchai was losing himself, that he was mamish going up to Shemayim. It looked like he was mamish going up to Shemayim. His mother called out from the Ezra's Nashim up on top. She had a seat right by the Ezra's Nashim. She started calling out the Ben Yishchai's name. She started calling out, Rav Yosef, 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 come back. This is your mother. Come back. And slowly but surely, the light left the Ben Yishchai's face. He became normal again, and he went down with the shmooze. What you should have is the ability, when you're doing something for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to literally just burst into flames. Just burst into flames. Just become a fireball. And just be gone. Just to almost, kilu, to kill yourself. By the way, he spoke on Shabbos for 4 hours straight. And when it was a Shabbos where there was, you know, Shabbos Shuvah Drasha or Shabbos Agabal, 4 times a year, he would get up and he would speak for 6 hours straight for everyone in the community. And the place was packed. Nobody got up and left. You know, I don't. There was probably chowing. I would assume there was chowing. But they got up. They sat there the entire time. I would assume it was after everything. I would assume it was in the late afternoon. So looking back, such a connection that they had brought Sari Menu out of this world. Sarimin, when she heard about the Akedah, she heard what happened to the Akedah, she became so attached, the same way that Avraham was sacrificing Yitzchak, she also said, I'm willing to go ahead and give Yitzchak Avinu, I'm willing to sacrifice Yitzchak Avinu up on his back, I'm willing to do the exact same thing my husband's doing. And she wasn't commanded. So she died. Her neshama left her body at that moment because she was willing to be Moser Nefesh Mamish for the Akedah. That's what brought Elio Anavi talking and learning to Elisha in the middle of the river that dried up, brought him in a Merkava in a fiery chariot up to Shemayim. Elio Anavi was flown up to Shemayim in a chariot because he was in such throes of the mitzvah, so ready to do the Eish of that mitzvah, he destroyed himself. Thus, by nothing, before I get to your question, anyway. It says, "Vaydaber Hashem Moshe Achrei Moshe Shnei Bnei Aaron." After they were willing to kill themselves, to go into the Mishkan, bring down that fire, and to do anything they could, the Korva Samlit Hashem, they came so close to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. They were so close to what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted them to do, to the ikur that God wants them to have in this world, by Amusu, that they had no choice but to die. They couldn't hold themselves back. It was too much for them to be able to hold themselves back in this world. Thus, by Amusu. See, everybody says about Nadir Raviyu, the chatoim that they did, about all the shtuye yayin, that they went in drunk, or that they did without the tzivoy, or that they said, let they paskin the halacha in front of Moshe Rabbeinu, or that they said, when will these people die and we'll be in charge. All of that, all of those midrashim, are trying to explain something much, much higher. Something much heavier going on behind the scenes in Nadav and Avihu. We saw in Parsha Shemini such a line that Moshe Rabbeinu said about Nadav and Avihu. And Parak Yud Pasuk Gimel, the Rashi says, "But who asher diber?" Moshe said to Aaron, "Yodei Yisi, she's Scottish Abayis Ben Yudov Shomalkam. Somebody has to die today." But he said, "Sabro Obi Obakha." I thought it was me or you, said Moshe Rabbeinu. "Achshav Ruani Shem Gedol Mimeni Umicha." Now I see they're greater. None of you were greater than Moshe and Aaron. We're not talking about some people, they're paskin in front of. If you're greater, then you can paskin in front of somebody else. There's no problem with paskining in front of somebody else. Somebody even asked me today, I don't get it. If there were greater people, according to Rashi, why couldn't they paskin? Mor halacha b'tnei rabam, they were the Rav. They were the Rebbe. How could they be? What do you say? There's something going on behind the scenes. What was it? I'm sorry? Ace before beauty. That I don't know if it's beauty, but I do understand what you're trying to get at over here. But no, age was not enough. It wasn't just that. So here's the line. The line that the Nitzutzei Shimshon says, where Shimshon Astropolia, the famous great nephew of the Maharal, who lived during the times of Tach V'Tach, during the Kalmaniki and the Cossacks, and he died right around that time. He says the line. He says, "Achshav Ruani Shem Gedolim Mimani Mecha." He says the following. He said, why couldn't Nadav and Avihu be like Chanoch and Eliyahu Anavi? Chanoch, Enoch, who was the son of Mesushalach, went up to Shemayim. Chanoch was the father of Mesushalach, I'm sorry. Went up to Shemayim and alive, with his full body, with his full goof. Eliyahu Anavi, the exact same way, went up with his goof. So they ask, if they were so great, Nadav and Avihu, why didn't they go up with their bodies? Why did their neshama have to leave them at all? Why did it bother having to leave them? They should have just gone straight with their bodies to Shemayim in a fiery chariot, or go straight up the way Chanoch did. Why would it be any other way? Why is it shaykh to be any other way? Says the Netzut Shimshon. You have to understand something. Nadav and Avihu were beyond anything, any tzaddikim in this world. They were above malachim. They were beyond any malach that you can imagine. And here's how it goes. There are worlds out there, worlds in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created to make things happen. And although we don't know anything about these worlds, Abia is what they're called. Atzilus is the upper world. There's Berea, then there's Yetzira, and then there's Asiya, where we're in, the world of doing. Asiya is the world that us people are in. Malachim are on the next level, that's Yetzira. Berea is supposed to be for Malachim, and Atzilus is mamish only at Kadosh Baruch Hu. Says in the Netzut Shimshon, the neshamos of Nadav and Avihu deserve to be in the level of Atzilus. All the way up mamish on the Kisei HaKavod with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Chanoch and Eliyahu became malachim. They became like a malach, the level of a malach. So they got to either Bria or Yetzirah. They came to those levels. But to get up to the level of Atzilus, it's impossible for a goof to get up there. No physicality can come anywhere near there. It's impossible to be anywhere, to be shaykh to that. So there's no way that Nadav and Avihu, with their bodies, could have come up to the level that they were supposed to be at in Shemayim. The Korvah Sum with Ne'ashem, to be as close as they possibly were to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So their goof had to be down here. Their neshamas left them. Their neshamas died. Can you imagine dying in the holiest place that can exist on this earth? In the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in front of the Aron Kodesh, at the time when the Ish comes down from Shemayim, there can't be anything greater. There's no greater death. There's nothing greater that you could have happen to you. That's Acharei Mos. Why did they die? The Korvah Sum with Ne'ashem, because they came so close to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, they had no choice but by a Mos. They had no choice. They had to die. That's what the Netzut Shimshon says. You were going to ask something before, Aaron. What were you going to ask?
I guess I was just muffled for the whole thing about that.
So this Sari Menu is all coming. It's brought down by a Medrash Rabbah. It's the one that I've seen is in the Sefer called Otzer HaMedrashim by Rabbi Eisenstein. Eisenstein has all these Otzers and everything like that. So we brought down that what was happening when Avraham Avinu was on the Akedah, Sari Menu was having an Akedah of her own. And that's all shot by the Satan being together with Sari Menu, or Og lifting her up and showing her what was going on. That what was happening was her Akedah in another way, her willingness to be able to sacrifice Yitzchak Avinu. Okay, I got a little bit more. You know, people always... I got an email this week, and again, it's like one of those emails where somebody said, like, I don't get it. I thought that everything was going right. I don't get why HaKadosh Baruch Hu isn't doing this for me or doing that for me. I'm davening, I'm learning, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do, and I don't get why it's happening. So, this is obviously not the forum to be able to discuss these types of things. Rehovi has a great piece on it in Alei Shur, and it's something to be able to talk about Stam in and of itself, in the thing of Ratzon, where he talks about the Shara Ratzon, when he goes into what willingness, what Ratzon means. What does it mean that you want to do something? But here's Stam a thing, the Chayban, right? You're supposed to live and do all the mitzvahs. Live in this world and do the mitzvahs. Rashi says, Le'olam Haba. The Bechaybahem is you will live in them and you'll get your reward in Olam Haba. Why? We know the line. Everybody knows the line. Schar mitzvos, b'chai al malekah. By al malekah. Nobody gets schar in this world for any mitzvos that you do. Schar mitzvos, b'chai al malekah. It does not exist inside this world. But hold on a second. We also know that Rishayim are given the reward in this world so that God doesn't have to deal with them in Olam Haba. So Rishayim get the reward here. So if something bad is happening to you, at least you know you're not a true Rasha. It's very hard to establish this in our day and age and to be able to say what I'm doing, if I'm getting rewarded. If I suddenly win the lottery, am I a Russia? Like, what does that mean exactly? You can't exactly apply it to our day and age and to be able to say something like that. But how is this shaykh? How is it possible that a guy gets rewarded in this world when it seems to be that you can only get rewarded in Olam Haba? It seems that Olam Haba is the only place you can get it. So what does that mean? Chafetz Chaim says a medrash. It is an unreal medrash. A medrash of Mishlei. It says, when a person does a mitzvah nowadays, let's say a person goes out and makes a bracha. What happens? In Shemayim, Mashiach and Eliyahu HaNavi write it down on a piece of paper. They write it down in a shtar. And it says, this person, that, let's just say, Chaim Zimmerman, has done a mitzvah. He has done a mitzvah. And they bring it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu signs on it. It's got to be an awesome signature. But there's a signature right on that shtar. And then Eliyahu and Mashiach bring it to the Malachim, and the Malachim give that person reward. Here's the mashal. Says the Chafetz Chaim, said, let's say, A regular king, or let's say, you know, let's give LeBron James, goes ahead and writes you a check. LeBron James is not writing out a check for $50. LeBron James wants something from you.
as a king. I'm not so sure, but let's say he can. Let's say he's doing that. I give him as a king. You know, so there's some chashivas there. Let's say he's writing you a check. So that type of a check is going to be a big check. I mean, he doesn't just stop. He's not going to spend like a buck or $2 or whatever it is. His entourage will pay for something like that, but he's going to write you a nice big check. If you're in a small town and you have that big check that's written to you by the king, by the person that's so rich that only pays for all these things, there's no way that they have enough money in their local bank branch to be able to cash the check. It'll take all their money. There's no way. I mean, the couple million dollars that the king is willing to reward you for, to give you for something that you did for him, the reward that you're getting there, there's no way that the small bank branch is going to have the money for it. They're going to tell you, listen, don't go to us. Go to the big Chase banks down in the big cities. Go to the huge city. You got to get it there because there's no way we're going to have enough money to cash in a check from the king. We're just not going to be able to do it. So what do? You don't have a choice. You have to go to the big city. You cash it in over there and you get all the money from over there. That's when a tzaddik does a mitzvah. When a rasha does a mitzvah, it doesn't say that Eliyahu and Chanuch, Eliyahu and Mashiach are writing down the stars. They're not writing up the checks. What happens? You just get a mitzvah. So Kadosh Baruch Hu, Kilu gives you the cash out of his pocket and gives it right to him. Meaning, somebody who's a rasha, whose level of doing mitzvos in this world is not the same level as a tzaddik doing a mitzvah, either because the kavana is different, or because there are mitigating factors, or whatever you want to say, there's something going on that the mitzvah of a rasha is not the same as the mitzvah of a tzaddik. The tzaddik can be rewarded only in Olam Haba. You can't cut it up. You can't cash that check in Olam Hazeh. What's it going to do? Your mitzvah, every mitzvah that you do, one bracha that you make is worth billions of dollars. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't write you, as much as you want that check, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't write you that check in Olam Hazeh. It's impossible. It's $500 billion for every bracha that you make. You make two brachas, and all of a sudden you get $1,000 billion, a trillion, right? My math is tremendous. $1 trillion right there for two brachas that you just made. How are you going to get that money? It's not shayach. It's like you're living in Mexico with like 5 billion pesos, like, which is really $6. Well, I can't get 10%. There's no way to cash in the check. To cash in the check, you could write on the thing, you know, just give me some of the money, but the check is too big. They can't even take it into the bank. They can't even bring it in. They look at the check and they're just like, this is too much. We can't have this in. We can't be shy after this. We can't do it. So what do? You got to go somewhere else to be able to cash it in. So where is that other place? It's Olam Haba. But in Russia, he can get it here. That's possible for the Russia to be able to get. That's the reason why a Russia can be rewarded in this world, but a tzaddik can't. Do you realize the koach of your mitzvos? One bracha, an ala michya that you make, a marav, a shakras, a mincha, one thing that you do. The amount of koach, the amount of power that you have from that is billions. Billions of dollars. So much that God is telling us, I can't reward you here. I'm sorry, but I can only reward you in a world that's not physical. That's a crazy amount. It's an unbelievable amount. That's nothing it's not shaykh to our world. That's the koach mitzvos, and that's the parsha, the whole parsha of Kedoshim Tiv, of trying to make yourself holy, exhorting us, telling us, this is what happens when you become kadosh. This is what happens when you're a kadosh and a chosid. Let me tell you a Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi in Trumos and Daf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. And this is quoted by Elena Lushabeach. I saw this, my unbelievable. It's just the Gemara. It's the Gemara. Yerushalmi. A bunch of policemen were running after a Jew. They're running after a Jew and they wanted to grab this Jew. They wanted to bring him to jail for something that he had done wrong. He had done something wrong. He ran to Lod, which was the city of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi lived in that city. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was well known for his Gilui Eliyahu. He spoke to Eliyahu Navi all the time. Always had something to do with Eliyahu Navi. So the policemen came to the city. They said to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, listen, we know you're hiding out this guy in your city. We know you're hiding him out somewhere around here. We know he's in your city. Send him out or we'll destroy the entire city. And they surrounded the entire city with policemen. The entire city was surrounded. We'll kill you. We'll destroy everyone in the city if you don't send this guy out. What's the halacha?
Send him out.
It's a mishnah. You have to send him out. If they don't ask for anybody in particular, they just say, send a guy out, then you can't. You got to fight. But if they say specifically, send that guy out, bring me that guy, then you have to send the guy out. So if Yeshua ben Levi didn't want to send him out, he went up to the guy and he appeased him. And he said, listen, you don't want a city to be destroyed because of you. Please go outside on your own. Please leave on your own. This question is why that should be, or why this should happen this way.
Even if beyond any reasonable doubt,
everyone in the city knows he's innocent, it's still the halacha to send him out.
The halacha is if they ask for a specific person, even by a girl, and you know they're going to rape her, the halacha is that you go ahead and you send that person out. Because they're asked for one specific person, and the alternative is, or we kill all of you. Or we take all of you.
Is it even if that's the alternative. Wrong?
It's a Dabar Mishnah, which the Gemara is going to go through.
Wrong? Not necessarily.
It doesn't say. It's a specification. Yeah, it's a specification of one person. It does not say what that person did. Or it doesn't seem to matter, although that's a matter for the Gemara. That's a matter for the Gemara over there. But yes, it seems to be that that's what it refers to. Rav Yishuv Levi sent him out. Eliyahu HaNavi didn't appear,
he went out on his own.
Eliyahu HaNavi did not appear to Rav Yishuv Levi for the next couple of days. Rav Yishuv Levi was shocked. Why is Eliyahu HaNavi not appearing for me? So he fasted, he did Tanios, and after he fasted, he asked for a Gilui Eliyahu. I think it's 40 days, however long you're supposed to fast for to have a Gilui Eliyahu. Eliyahu HaNavi appeared to him, and he said to him, why aren't you coming to me anymore? What did I do wrong? He said, what, I'm going to appear to a Moser? You gave that guy away to the government. What, I'm going to appear to a Moser? I said, Rav Yishuv Levi, I did the Mishnah. I was Makayim HaHalacha in the Mishnah. This is the Mishnah. I'm not making up my own halacha. This is the Mishnah that says this. What do you want me to do? Said Eliyahu HaNavi, here's the line. And this is the end of the Gemara. The Zu Mishnas Chassidim? Is that a Mishnah that applies to Chassidim? So that's a hard line. What does that mean? So here's the line. Says the Chazon Ish to explain this Gemara. The Pnei Moshe has a pshat in it. The Chazon Ish says the following. As a Chassid, Rav Yehoshua ben Levi is being told by Eliyahu HaNavi, you should have davened immediately for this guy. And what does that mean? HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't allow this to happen to tzaddikim. What happens when something like this happens, Rav Yehoshua ben Levi immediately should have made a cheshbon nefesh. What did I do wrong to deserve to have this happen to me? To have this situation happen in my city. What did I do wrong? If you didn't find anything that you've done wrong, and I can't say that, but Rav Yehoshua ben Levi can, if Rav Yehoshua ben Levi says there's nothing that I did wrong, then he has to know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu meant it to happen on purpose. Why? For you to daven, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was ready to accept your tefillah, to make a massive miracle happen. A chassid and a kadosh who knows that he has not done anything else wrong when something like that happens, knows, he absolutely knows, that you have to daven in that situation, and you're guaranteed that God will help you. Guaranteed, says the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish says, this is the only time where I'll ever say this, that you are guaranteed to be helped. Guaranteed. I will not say this by anything else. If this happens to you, you are guaranteed to be listened to. Somebody asked Rechaim Kanievsky, who's a chassid? Who could be guaranteed like that? Rechaim Kanievsky's line back was, who's stopping anyone from being a chassid? Who's stopping anyone? Here's a maisa. This is Baba Ryusik Zoberstein. Maisa is, the Slana Mareba, and the Baal Yisod Va'avoda, you wrote the same for Yisod Va'avoda. The Slana Mareba, one time, he was having a tish, and all the chassidim were sitting down at the table, and in the middle of the tish, the son of Rabbah said, anyone who's not a chassid cannot be in my tish. If you're not a chassid, get out of my tish. Every single one of the chassidim got up, and they walked out. He meant a chassid is in a kadosh. And the chassidish yid, they're called chassidish, but he didn't mean a chassid is in that. He said, if you're not a holy yid, if you're not a chassid in the term of kadosh, then get out. I don't want you here. So everybody walked out except for one guy. One guy sat down, all the way toward the end, one guy sat down inside. So the Rebbe calls him over. He's the only person there. The Rebbe says to him, you think you're a chassid? And the man said, yes. He said, why? What do you do? And he said, the Gemara Moed Katan on Daf Yud Chesam and Aleph says that if you cut your nails and you burn them, you're a chassid. Hasorfan chassid. You burn your nails, you're a chassid. You ever tried burning your nails before? I've almost set fire to my house trying to do so. It's impressive trying to put them inside a thing. He says, Asorfan Chassid. The Slana Rebbe let him stay. He's the only person. You have to follow what Chazal have given you already in those things, and that will lead you to become a Chassid. Doing something that's a little bit out of the ordinary, just a little bit out of the ordinary, just a little bit beyond the normal, then you're fine. You know the word Chassid appears in this week's Parsha? The problem is, it appears when you sleep with your sister in Parshas Kedoshim. If you sleep with your sister, then it's chesed hu. It's called a chesed. And the way it's translated is abominable. But chesed doesn't mean abominable. It's gemilas chesed. It's defined as chesed. What does that mean? Chesed does not mean kindness. It's a misnomer. It does not mean kindness. Chesed means going beyond the normal realm. Being extraordinary. That's what chesed is. It's extraordinarily good or extraordinarily bad. It's either one. What a chesed is going extraordinary. It's being so far beyond the norm. So far beyond the norm. You expect so much from him. A chesedish yid does something wrong. Could be anything. Every other Jew could be doing the exact same wrong thing. But you look at that guy and say, oh, look at the chesed. Look at that chesedish yid. Look at that person. A chesed you expect so much out of. He's beyond the ordinary. He's beyond anything else that's there. That's the idea behind a chesed. That's the idea behind a kadosh. That's the idea behind somebody who's so far beyond. You know, the Taz, the famous Taz, one of the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, he was misupik about Shabbat Tzvi. He lived in the times of Shabbat Tzvi, the false, you know, the false Messiah. And he said he didn't know whether he was or not, or whatever it was. So he called one of the, a bunch of his Talmidim. He said to his Talmidim, go to Shabbat Tzvi and see how he acts. Don't ask him any questions in Torah. Don't ask him for anything. Just watch him in everything he does, from morning until night, including the night. Be in the same room as him. Be with him all day long. And the Hasidim came back. And they said, you know, they spoke over miracles that he had done, all the different things. So Taz asked, was there anything that you saw that was unusual? And they said, you know, at night, he slept on his back. The halacha is, prakdan, lying on your back, is usher. You're supposed to sleep to the side. To your right side, turn to the left side. You're supposed to sleep on your side. Said the Chazon Ish, left side and the right side. Thank you. The Chazon Ish goes ahead and says, the Taz said, that in that situation, there's no way that guy could be Mashiach. Absolutely no way. The Mashiach wouldn't be over on one word of Chazal. There's no way that he could be over on any word of Chazal. We absolutely know that Taz was right. But all he looked at was that one thing, a Kadosh, a Chassid, he wouldn't do one thing that Chazal was telling you not to do. Not one thing. It would be absolutely impossible. You know, this is one of the best. I heard this story and I was floored by it. There were, you know, there are many Gedolim who never looked in a mirror. They absolutely never looked at a mirror once in their life. Meaning they had no idea what they looked like. Absolutely no idea. And they didn't have any pictures, you know, before whatever it was, the 1900s. They didn't have any pictures. And even then, who took pictures of anything? There were a lot of Gedolim that were very, very machped not to have their picture taken. Rabbi Yomi Satmar, the Satmar Rebbe, was one of those. There are no normal pictures of him. They say there's one picture of his actual face where they got him and he didn't know they were taking a picture. But other than that, you'll always see, whenever you see a Satmar Rebbe picture, you'll see him like this. You'll see him like turn around to the side. You won't have the full frontal view of Rabbi Yomi Satmar. Still very machped. Rabbi Yonatan Eibschitz writes in Yaros Devash that there's some type of idea, that there's a shade, there's some type of ruach atuma that comes with pictures. That anything that has, you know, those little animals that you have and little people and little, like, action figures and everything, every single one of them has a shade with them that causes them to be like Toy Story, that allows them to, like, do whatever they sort of want to do. Rabbi Yonatan Eibschitz speaks about it at length, about what it is. It's obviously beyond our understanding, and it's something that's beyond this world, but he says, because of that, that you can't have any pictures, you can't have any statues, you can't have any toys that have anything, and that's why, and All for the Boss, at the very beginning, in the new All for the Boss, they took out this story. In the old All for the Boss, they still have in this story. This story is still in there, but they took it out the second time around because it was just, it freaked me out when I read it. I read it my second year in Eretz Yisrael, and I remember seeing it. By the daughter that wrote the story, I forgot, Ruchama Shane, I believe. Ruchama Shane, when she wrote the story, it was Rav Scheinberg's father-in-law. You have Rav Yaakov Yosef Perman. He's Rav Scheinberg's father-in-law. So when Ruchama Shane had a doll, so it says that he came home and he saw the doll on the couch and he looked at it and he picked it up. And in front of his daughter, he smashed its face in. Smashed its face. Until, like, the nose was gone and it was a little bit, like, mangled. And then he gave it back to his daughter. And, like, his daughter was, like, crying and hiding behind her mother and everything. It was, like, traumatic. I was traumatized reading the book. They took it out from the new version of All for the Boss. It's only in the old version. And, it's a freaky story. But that's what it was. I mean, that's the way the halakha was back then. I don't know why it changed or how it changed or what posik changed or what it was different. But back then, everybody had that halakha. You couldn't have a full-blown doll. There was no such thing as a Barbie doll that you could have in your house because it was considered something that was under pictures. Nobody had pictures of Gedolim in their house. The Chassam Sofer used to say it's Osir Gomer to have any type of a picture. So people didn't look in mirrors either. It was that's a halakha of Losobash Gever Simazisha, of wearing Simazisha. But it said, I know, this is beyond something that's, you know, this is not something.
Anything to do with it's a cultural thing in the sense that it signified idol worship in any
situation. For sure it had something to do with that. Yeah, without a question. And there's no question that it had...
It's beyond our understanding.
Yes, and there's no question that Harry Potter picked up on it also. So the pictures are all moving around because that's the idea behind what these what Rav Yonos Nachmanides was referring to. If you see the Yaros Tavash and you look at it, it's mamash, it's scary what he says, what's going on behind pictures or what's with those types of things. The Chazon Ish, when the first time he saw his picture, somebody gave him a picture of his, he said, "Is this my brother?" He had no idea what he looked like. He had absolutely no idea. Of course, like, he smoothed down his beard. He's like, well, whatever it is, you know. But he could see his clothing to see if it was clean or whatever it was. But he knew, he never looked in a mirror. He never looked at anything. So he knew what his brother looked like. So he looked at it, and he said, oh, it's my brother. But it wasn't. It was actually him. This story was the best story. The best story I think I've heard in a long time. The Chassam Sofer, Rav Moshe Sofer, and the Mari Asad, Rav Yehuda Asad, they were both together, and they both lived in Hungary. And they were going to the government offices in order to, and it's, I don't know what it was, to advocate for the Yidden, whatever it was, to take care of those Jews that lived in Hungary. But they had to take care of them. So the Mari Asad and the Chassam Sofer are both walking in. They went to the government offices. This office was huge. And one of the rooms inside this office was this huge room full of mirrors on every side. Full of mirrors all over the place. The Mari Asad had never seen himself. He had never looked at himself. He had never known what he looked like. Mari Asad and the Chassam Sofer are walk inside the room. And immediately, they both see the reflection on the other side of the wall. The Mari Asad turns to the Chassam Sofer, and he says to him, Rav Moshe, on the other side of the room is a Jew who the Shechina rests upon. I can see the Shechina resting upon him. Come, let's go get a bracha. And he starts walking toward that person who had the Shechina upon him. The Chassam Sofer just sat there and smiled. Chassam Sofer smiled. He just smiled. The Mari Asad starts walking, and then all of a sudden realizes he's walking toward himself. He's walking toward himself. He didn't realize that it was his own mirrored image. He's walking toward himself. So he quickly turns around to the Chassam Sofer and says, I was referring to you. I was talking about you. You're the one with the Shechina. So Chassam Sofer said, you just said the MS. If you just said the MS, you don't have to go ahead and lie and try to make me feel good. You're clearly talking the MS. You have the Shechina upon you. You have the Shechina upon you. You can see it through a mirror. You have the Shechina upon you. What's there to talk about? That was just an awesome, absolutely awesome story. But the classic Chassam Sofer smiling right afterward as well. Okay, so what can we do? What can we do? We're not going to stop looking at ourselves in mirrors, because I don't think that's going to happen. We're not going to stop taking pictures, because pictures are really cute. We're not going to stop, and weddings are very, very hard to go to without the pictures. You're not going to stop, you know, you're not going to be able to, something that you can work on is proctum, to be able to sleep on your back, maybe to turn it to the side a little bit, maybe you could do that, but it's going to be very, very hard to get yourself, you know, to try to use it, to start it and whatever, but it's very, that's something, I guess, that you can start. But I got one thing. I found another Chafetz Chaim. It's called the time. It talks about a pasuk in this parsha, lo sikom velo sitor, how you can be a true chassid and a kadosh. Don't take revenge and don't bear a grudge. Lo sikom velo sitor. Here's what he says. He says, why shouldn't you take revenge? Why shouldn't you, you know, get angry if the guy's not lending you his stuff? The guy's, you go up to him. You're like, can I borrow your shovel? He's like, no, I don't have a shovel. And he's carrying a shovel. He's holding a shovel in his hand. No, I don't have it right now. I don't know where it is. You know he has one. You heard him mow his lawn the other day. Can I borrow your lawnmower? She's like, I don't have a lawnmower. I don't know what you're talking about. You know he has one. Why shouldn't you get angry? Says the Chofetz Chaim. Don't be upset. Because it's clear that if he doesn't want to give it to you, and there's no real reason why he doesn't want to give it to you, it's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want you to have it. The reason why is because Hashem knows that you need this, and he knows that you don't need it right now. You need it 5 minutes from now. You need it later on. But you don't need it right now. Right now, you don't need it. If you don't need it right now, what are you getting upset for? Well, because that guy's not giving it to you? The reason why he's not giving it to you is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved over here. It's not you. But this, in this idea of Lo Sikom Velo Sitor, I know what you're talking about. But in those types of ideas, it's like this. Here's once again, the Chofetz Chaim gives a mashal. It's like a guy is looking for Reuven. Right, he's looking for Reuven. He's like, where's Reuven? So he sees a couple guys. The guys are like, oh, you know what? If you go over there, there's like a whole group of people. Maybe you'll find Reuven over there. Maybe he's over there. So the guy says, oh, good idea. I'll go check out over there. He goes over there and he asks, are you Reuven? None of them are Reuven. Does he get upset? And so, like, I can't believe you're not Reuven. What are you not Reuven for? No, clearly, you know. Reuven's not there. Reuven's somewhere else. You just got to keep searching until you find Reuven. You don't get angry. Your name's Shimon? What's wrong with you? How can your name be Shimon? Your name should be Reuven. No, you don't get upset. You realize that it's not, he's not there. So this is it. The axe that you're trying to borrow, the lawnmower that you're trying to borrow, it's not there.
It's not there. Reuven's not there. Reuven's over here. So you just got to keep going until you find that lawnmower, until HaKadosh Baruch Hu is allowing you, until your eyes open up and you see the Reuven. You see the Reuven's right there. Don't get all crazy and say to yourself, it's all because that guy's the guy who's making me do that. I'm going to take revenge against him. I'm going to make sure that I'm going to steal his lawnmower, and then he's never going to have that lawnmower again. Or, the next time that guy comes to me and he tries to borrow something from me, I'm never going to let him. You want to be a chassid? You want to be a kadosh? Think this in your head. It's not him. It's Hashem. It's a Kadosh Baruch Hu trying to do this to me, and I am sitting there and I'm saying to myself, it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Am I like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi that doesn't have a chait that I can't attribute it to? I probably have done something like this. Probably something I could do. Lo sikom velo sitor means don't take revenge because it's not up to you. That's it. What are you going to say, Dave? Okay, here we go. The summary of what we did today was the following. Nadav and Avihu were so holy, they died because their holiness was so great. It was mamish for Shemayim. Number two, the schar for our mitzvahs is not shayach for Olam Hazeh. The schar for our mitzvahs is only shayach in Olam Hazeh because you can't cash in the check down here. A chassid's tefillos are always answered. A chassid's tefillah, if he knows he's a chassid, if he knows what he's doing is correct, his tefillos are always answered no matter what. And how to be a kadosh? Forgive others for their failings, because people are messed up. And we all know that. Forgive others for their failings and be willing to accept, and then you won't be losing come with story, you won't be over on that issue, then everything should be good. Have a good Shabbos, guys. Everything should be good. Can you hear me for a second? Yeah. Mountain level because of
each. I think it's internal.
It's important to remember.
If you're not,
I agree.
You take a picture for what?
It's a cool thing to show.
It's a cool thing to show to who?
You don't have a photograph.
When me and my daughter got to feed giraffes and we were petting the giraffes, we took a picture of it. So there's one picture of me and my daughter feeding a giraffe. Me and Devora, when she was 1 year old, 1.5 years old in the Tel Aviv Zoo, with a giraffe, had its blue tongue, and the blue tongue is like all right on top of Devora, and we're like standing right there feeding the giraffe. That's something I want to remember. So that's something I'm willing to take a picture for.
You remember it. You clearly remember it.
So I can go up to David Help later on and say, you got to see this picture of me with the
giraffe. Because you didn't get to see the giraffe? That's not a good thing. You don't inspire jealousy.
No, not for jealousy. No. Say, like, this is the coolest thing that's ever happened. You got to go to the television.
It is the coolest thing. That's really the coolest thing that's ever happened. That's ridiculous.
No, it's like number 27.
It's not cool at all. It's really stupid.
The picture
actually.
Of Michael Jordan, like, in the air.
Kids in the end. I hear you.
I hear what you're saying. Technically, it's nothing. But it's a nice thing to have. Technically, it's a nice thing to have. Isn't it a nice thing to have? You don't think it's nice at all?
I know, but he's a whole lot of people.
What's your phone number? That's our number. What about Gedolim? What about Gedolim?
Is that a picture of a goblin?
Silly. Why?
What's the lesson? Okay, put a picture of a goblin on your wall. Okay, so I'm going to be like that goblin. Meaning I'm going to grow my beard out. I'm older. I'm not old, I'm young. A lot of people have the problem, right? They look at them, how can I get going? Look, you look so old.
No, but you don't always read their scars. All you do is look at that face.
You get to know them. Look at the picture. Go talk to them.
You look at the face and you remind yourself of what that person was like.
Do you know what the person was like?
Yeah.
Oh, you read some fantastic stories in some article book that don't have an extra.
I don't read article books. But yes, it's a different scar that you would go ahead and read and you would be able to stop it. Oh, I didn't stop it. Yeah, stop it. There we go.